Leadership is taking people on a journey where there's a vision, guidance, and purpose.
Good leaders lead with the heart as well as the head.
Leadership means doing the right thing for the right reason, no matter how difficult it might be.
You're listening to Leadership Unwrapped, a podcast where you will hear from people who are living leadership every day.
Well, Niamh, I have to say, amazing conversation. That's all I'm just going to say about that. But no, I'm going to say more, obviously, because it's me. But yeah, we just for our listeners, you're going to hear a podcast with Jamie Shapiro. And Jamie is really onto something that's a little bit different, maybe for us on this side of the water, because she's talking about full body coaching, sort of embodied coaching. And that takes sort of thoughts about your physical health and well-being, as well as the sort of the cognitive coaching piece. So I really think we all need to hear this.
Yeah, she has incredible expertise from a variety of places, and it all comes together in this kind of embodied leadership idea. I mean, she's a nutritionist, a coach, she has experience leading. Like, I mean, she's really bringing it all together in a way where she's also lived this, if you know what I mean. And she's researching the area, she's writing about it. She has a book which we'll share in the bio. Like, she everything is just coming together. Yeah. To really bring forward this idea that we need to be looking at the way in which we're living and the way in which we're working in more of a holistic way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think it's really important for us to think about it differently. Yeah, and everything makes perfect sense. The way mm-hmm. when she talks about it, it's just so logical. You kind of say, yeah, that absolutely makes perfect sense. So I feel it might be something that is part of the jigsaw for leadership, for helping in sustainable leadership as well. So I really enjoyed talking to her.
Yeah, and it's real positive. Like, I think you're going to come away from having listened to this with just a good feeling as well. She does it in a really, really positive way, because I think sometimes when we talk about things like the sustainability, like you're saying there, Patricia, that this will undoubtedly feed into, it can leave us with that more of a negative, okay, like, I should be getting 8 hours sleep. I know I should. Mm. Like, I should be going out for the walk. I should be doing whatever, you know, when we're all, you know, really trying our best under the circumstances that we're in. But this conversation isn't that. It's in a really positive way. So yeah, I think you really enjoy it.
Yeah, and I have to say my inner nerd loves somebody who just gets totally excited about research data sets. I was like, I love that. So I guess that's the piece. There's evidence behind this to make the kind of the suggestions and the recommendations and the thoughtfulness is also based on research. I just think there's just something really unique here that's I hope will give people something really valuable to listen to. So
I mean, talking about that good work piece, you know, when, like we were talking about, you know, that there's a bigger, the spirituality, and there's something bigger than us that drives our work and things like that. I mean, talk about doing the work that you should be doing. Yeah, when we answered the call and Jamie was like, I was working through a data set last night. I got so excited about it. Like, I mean, she's just fantastic.
And brilliant.
She's really doing brilliant work. So yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, enjoy.
Jamie Shapiro is the CEO of Connected EC, a positive organizational psychologist and the bestseller author of the book Brilliant, Be the Leader Who Shines Brightly Without Burning Out. Jamie is a master certified executive leadership coach, professional speaker, researcher, facilitator, and nutritionist. Having experienced burnout in the corporate world, Jamie understands the incredible pressures we face in our lives and the difficulty in staying connected to professional and personal goals in these demanding environments. She left the corporate world with a mission to make changes for people and organizations, focusing on helping leaders to develop a keen awareness of how both their health and mindset impact leadership performance. And we're so glad you did, Jamie. Jamie's vision is to bring a new form of full body coaching to people in the business world. Jamie, it's just fabulous to have you with us. You're very welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
That's great. We're delighted you said yes. So thank you.
Yeah.
I'm delighted you asked. So thank you.
We were just having a quick conversation before we started recording, and we had met, it's a couple of months ago now at this stage, I suppose. But we had met and had a chat, and like myself and Patricia then just did a deep dive into some more of Jamie's work. We were just so excited about it. So it was so nice to go full circle then and come back knowing we have this conversation coming up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, Jamie, welcome. Anyway, delighted that to have the chat, because your work pushes the boundaries of the way that we're thinking around coaching here. So there's a lot for us to learn. And could we just even start by asking you, when you say full body coaching, what does that mean? Yes. Because I think that might be a new concept for some of our listeners.
What I found when I was being coached in the corporate world is that there was this huge focus on what was going on between my ears, right? What's your strategy? What's your communication? And that is absolutely essential and important. But there was this complete lack of awareness that I had this whole physical body that needed to be optimized in order for my leadership to be optimized. And so when I talk about full body coaching, I'm really talking about that integration, recognizing that we have lots of access points to our leadership capacity, and the physical body is one of them, and optimizing that, optimizing our vitality, our energy within to give to others is something that I felt was really not addressed in the coaching world for a long time. And so when I started my organization, it was really about connecting the dots of well-being as the foundation for leadership performance. We've got to encompass the whole system, not just what's between our ears.
Yeah. Yeah. And how's it being received? How do you think people are responding to it?
When I started, which was a long time ago, I think people thought I had three heads. I got a lot of questions, to be honest. Well, what are you? Are you a well-being coach? Are you a leadership coach? Are you a nutritionist? Like, what lane are you in? And my answer was always, yes, I'm all of those things. I believe we need all of those things to be at our best. And so I will say I always say that the beginning of my work, it felt like pushing a boulder uphill and hoping I don't get crushed by it before the boulder started going flat and then downhill. And I do feel like we're in a moment in time where people are really understanding the importance of this integration. Yeah. There's more awareness of why we need to focus on this more systemically versus, you know, bolt on programs or bolt on things, and that we have to integrate how we're approaching organizations, how we're approaching leadership. And to me, I think there's been a real shift, particularly over the last 3 years, in understanding why well-being has to be at the core of what we talk about from an organizational and a leadership perspective.
Yeah. I think it's huge, because I was at a session recently where and it was in relation to bullying and incivility, and they were talking about leadership and the pressures on us in that space. But one of the things that the person said was, if you don't know how to say no, the body will say no for you. And that's quite frightening, actually. Mm-hmm. And it was really insightful, because there is a piece around, you know, the constant growing of the pace of work and the expectation that leaders have to always be at the top of their game. And it was like, but you can't actually do that. And if you can't say no, and you can't look holistically at how you're physically responding to work, you really can't be at the top of your game. So I was really struck by that.
And that's really why I started focusing on the research, is that I really wanted to show scientifically that this just wasn't an idea. This actually, there was science behind it. And I think there is so much good work out there connecting the dots here and showing the importance of the physical body. And my research showed, you know, when you have that energy, that's when you can give at your highest levels. But often in leadership, we give to depletion. And if you look at a lot of the leadership research, it's very focused on how the leader is giving to their team, how the leader is giving to the organization. But there's not enough research talking about, well, how is that leader giving to themselves in order to have that capacity to give to others? So that's really where I've specialized from a research perspective, is how do we make sure that we're talking about and showing scientifically the importance of that.
Yeah. Because there's a difference, isn't there, between this idea of kind of just taking care of yourself because it's one of the things that we should be doing, versus you need to be doing this to still be working, you know, even if your core focus is on working at the best of your capacity, you need to be doing this. Like, you know, you hear people say things about, like, your body, you know, is your home, so you need to take care of it so that you're, but like, it's not just that, it's you actually, it will help you and will help the way that you're working and help the way that you're leading if you're doing it. And it's so often the type of thing that we put to the wayside quickest when we get under pressure or under stress, isn't it?
It's so true. And that's the mind shift I'm trying to get leaders to make. And there's a great quote, it's not mine, that self-care isn't selfish. And it's so incredibly true that when we give to ourselves, if we can reframe it and say, I am doing this not just for me, but I'm doing this so that I have the capacity that I want to have for others, for my organization, to be at my best. That is a mind shift for a lot of people, because people feel like when they take space for themselves or they care for themselves, that somehow that's detracting from their other goals. And that's just not true, right? That's just not what the science shows. It's not the reality, but it's a mind shift for most people.
Yeah. And when I was reading that phrasing, and you said it there as well, Jamie, of focusing on what's between the ears, it's actually nearly funny, like, because it's like, because you immediately realize how small a thing it is that we're focusing on, you know, in the context of our whole being.
Yes. Yep. It's so true. There's this whole human body we can leverage. And one of the things I say a lot is, I feel like one of the key leadership tools that nobody talks about is the breath and the importance of just taking a deep breath and how influential that can be in your responsiveness versus your reactivity. And it's like, why don't we teach this in Leadership 101? Yeah. When you're feeling, you know, emotionally charged, when you're feeling triggered, close your mouth and take a deep breath. Like, that is going to allow you the space. That one breath can make a difference. And yet, that I was never taught that in leadership. Well, it's very rarely part of the leadership curriculum. And yet, I think maybe the number one leadership tool out there.
I agree. I think there's the piece around the breathing, centering and bringing you back to yourself, but also even the pause moment it gives you to just transpose from the high octane to let me think about this, you know, to give that space is really important. Do you know? So the other piece that I've been looking into is sleep as being very important as well, you know, and we don't realize how sleep deprived we are.
Yeah, I was just looking at a study this morning, and I'm sorry, I don't have it at the top of my mind, but it was talking about when executives, they looked at executives at, you know, that top leadership level, when executives were sleep deprived or, you know, not getting a much sleep, it was showing the impact to executive function. And it was somewhere in like, you know, the 10 to 20% decrease of executive function. And it's like, come on, right? Like, all these things work together. Let's start prioritizing them. Let's start recognizing that these goals are intertwined. They're not separate. And I think that is true, not just at an individual level, but at a team level and at an organizational level. We've been working on some research around team and organization, team cohesion, organizational culture. And one of the core things we found is well-being is at the center. Do you care about me as a human being? Does this organization care about me as a human being? And that is one of the access points, not just from the individual side, but from the team and the organization side as well.
Yeah, it's that belonging piece, isn't it? It's huge.
It's huge.
We often talk about it in the context of, I mean, educational leadership is what we're most engaged with, I suppose. So quite often we think about it in the context of, you know, children in schools, for example, and we don't think it's as significant for some reason, you know, when we reach adulthood. It's massive.
It's massive. It is absolutely massive. You're right. And, you know, I think there are a lot of lessons we learn as children in the school system that somehow start to lose their awareness as adults. You know, I see things, I have a 12 and a 14 year old, and I was so happy when I saw things like embracing growth and all the incredible conversations around mindset and how we show up and how we care for ourselves. Like, I feel like in many school systems, we have some of this foundation. I'm not saying we can't improve. We can always improve. But some of these messages are there in the school system, and then they start losing their way as we go into adulthood.
Yeah. I think the disconnect between the body and the mind, we know it's a age-old Cartesian divide that isn't a good thing, but
But as we get older, we begin to impose that more and more as a way of maybe preparing for the world of work or preparing for life. But it's a real disservice to our children to do that. We have to find a different way of doing that, I think.
I agree.
It's actually funny where... I didn't think of this at the time when I saw it during the week, but we just went for a walk a couple of nights ago, and there was like a mother and her child, and the little boy was maybe, I don't know, seemed four or something like that. I'd say maybe three, four. But we kind of got a giggle out of it because he just ran over to this patch of, it wasn't mud, but just kind of dry dirt, if you know what I mean, just really threw his hands into it and was like messing around, throwing it up in there. And I locked eyes with the mother, and, you know, she just kind of, you know, gave me a little roll of the eyes, like, and kind of was smiling. Yeah. And the two of us just ended up laughing, and he was just having the best time. And yeah, there's just something so pure and such a big lesson for us to learn, to remember what it's like when your body and your mind are really just one in that, yes, childhood space.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So I hadn't thought of it at the time.
Yeah. I think we spend time trying to disconnect that, so moving our children into that sort of, well, in the Irish system, a very exam driven education system. And so that divide into the sort of thinking person as opposed to the feeling person. And then when we're in adulthood, we spend all our time trying to get back to being that feeling person, right, and beginning to try and align ourselves back in through meditation and breath work and all. It's we're not helping ourselves much, no, I think.
No, yeah. I agree with
you. Yeah.
I'm wondering, Jamie, because you've obviously, you've been really involved in researching this area, and, you know, you even mentioned it earlier. I suppose a lot of it is that we need to kind of prove that it just isn't just conversation, you know, that these things are,
yeah,
there's evidence to back them up. But I'm wondering, is there anything that you've found when looking at all of this that has particularly surprised you? Or is it mostly stuff that you think you might have had an inkling or known in some level, and this is further proof?
Yes, and so there's a lot of things that I found in my research where I was like, okay, yeah, this is what I thought. The biggest surprise for me was in one of the quantitative studies I did, where I was looking at leaders and followers, and looking at well-being factors and vitality and servant leadership. I thought I was just going to see the direct correlations, right? I thought it was like, I am vital, therefore I can give. And what I realized is that vitality, interestingly, is a choice to give, right? So we can be highly vital and choose to be servant leaders or give positive relational energy to others, or we can choose not. And interestingly, when we're highly vital and we choose to give that energy, followers will rate those leaders exceptionally.
Yeah.
When we are not vital and we're just not giving that much, followers will rate that leadership as average. But if you're highly vital and you are not giving that energy, the leadership ratings go way down. So when I first got my data set back, I was like, what is my whole theory wrong? Because they didn't realize those two things were canceling them each other out. And so it took me a little while to really pull apart the data and understand that it's a choice, and we choose in leadership every day whether we share our energy or not. And so that was just a really big aha for me, where I had never thought about that side of vitality and the potential of being highly vital and choosing not to give. And then I thought about toxic leadership, and I thought about leaders who are literally like what we call energy vampires, right? They're sucking the life out of others, and they are super vital, but they are not displaying those positive leadership behaviors that we're looking for. So once, you know, I pulled apart the data, I was like, okay, I get it. But before that, I mean, it was just like a little bit of mind explosion for 24 hours working with this data set going, I can't figure out what's going on. And so that was really interesting.
That's fascinating. You know, I've spent a bit of time looking at the toxic leadership piece. I haven't thought about it from the way that you're talking about it now, but it's really interesting. I think we know we know when someone is holding back or is just not, and it's not about having to give everything all the time. I just want to be clear about that, but we do know when somebody isn't invested or is more laissez-faire. We can feel it, and we don't like it in our organization. It's a really interesting connection to make. That's interesting data.
Yeah, it was really interesting, and it brought a lot of light to me to why there are just those people that seem so energized, but I'm with them and I feel so depleted, right? And it is that energy vampire type of, like, it's the self-focus versus the other focus.
Yeah.
And that to me was a, you see the data and you're like, I don't get it. And then you finally figure it out and you're like, oh, that makes theoretical sense.
Yeah.
But wasn't the hypothesis I started with by any stretch.
Yeah. I love when that happens in research, though. I sort of get a wee buzz from that. It's nice when the data speaks to you in a way you didn't expect it to. I think that's then you're onto something. Yeah, I really like that.
After you pull your hair out for
It's the darkness before the dawn stuff. That's what I always say about that. But but it's really interesting about, if I can just talk energy vampires for just a minute, but you know what I find interesting about that space is that it sometimes takes us a bit of time to figure out that that's what we're in. So we just, God, oh, no, God, I met them. I feel wrecked. Don't know what's going on. It takes about 3 or 4 or 5 exposures to it for you to realize every time I come away from that person, I'm not 100%. Or somebody gives you a piece of feedback to say, did you just meet X again? Because every time you come away, I get a sense that, you're not yourself. Isn't that really interesting?
It is really interesting. And I think some people are pretty sophisticated at it, right? And so you don't catch on right away.
Yeah.
And all of the data points tell me that I shouldn't feel this way, but yet I walk away feeling this way. And then you start to, like, over time, see the pattern. But yeah, there's some pretty sophisticated energy vampires out there that have a way of creating an effect that we don't see.
Yeah. And I love the way that you've simplified it hugely. I know there's a lot behind it, but you say it's the self-focus rather than the other or the we. That is the kernel of it, really, isn't it? It's about them being about their needs being met at the cost of everybody else's, which is really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Think the piece around, like, the importance of how much energy you're bringing but how much energy you're willing to give is a huge takeaway nugget as well, isn't it? Because
for sure,
like, even with the best will in the world, I mean, obviously we all know that leadership roles are extremely demanding. I mean, again, it highlights the need for exactly what it is that you're talking about. I mean, I know, I obviously don't have as much energy to give if I've had a crappy night's sleep or if I hadn't exercised in a couple of days or I haven't done, the pieces that I need to do that make me feel good. But there's a really important piece, I think, in hearing the significant impact that can have, because sometimes when you're in these roles and you're just trying to survive the day, you might think, okay, well, that's great. Like, I got through that. But there might have been, interactions that you had along the way where people have picked up that energy or the lack of energy that you mightn't have even been attuned to in that moment. And of course, we're all only trying our best, but I think it just really highlights the importance of what it is that you're talking about, Jamie.
Yes. And I think it's important to recognize that as leaders, the demands are just so great. And so it is very easy to give away all of our energy if we don't have the right boundaries for ourselves and we're not caring for ourselves. And I think particularly people who are other focused, who do want to help the organization and all the people in them, they are giving, giving, giving. And without the awareness that that can send you into burnout, that can be really hard. And I know this is slightly controversial, but I really see the opposite side of burnout being vitality. I know a lot of the literature focuses on engagement, but I really feel like burnout leads to disengagement and vitality leads to engagement. So I see burnout and vitality as the different ends of the spectrum. And so if we're not focused on that side, if we're not focused on how do I care for my vitality, we can slip very easily into the burnout side, particularly when we are other oriented.
Yeah. And the other piece that of the puzzle that you talk about in your book is about nutrition, the importance of nutrition as well. It's not just the sleep and minding the energy, but it's actually the food that we're eating and how that affects our vitality and our energy as well. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yes, so when I became a nutritionist and a coach, was one of these moments where people kept asking me, what does nutrition have to do with leadership? And I'm like, really? Like that we put in our body for energy and the thing that requires so much energy, like no connection, we're not. And it was just an interesting moment for me that people felt like these two worlds were so disconnected, where in my mind, food is the thing we put in our body that creates all of this capacity. And if we're not thoughtful about food as fuel and really thinking about quality and how we're nourishing ourselves, it to me is a miss. And I will say one of the reasons that I focused on nutrition so heavily is it was always the first thing to go when I was in executive. It was as soon as stress hit, it was the first thing that seemed to get eliminated. I stopped eating lunch, or I was grabbing a candy bar because I didn't have time, or I was traveling, you know, every single week and just reaching for the thing instead of actually caring for myself. And to me, it was like, wait, we're missing that foundation. And I've had leaders come to me and say, Jamie, I don't know what's going on with my leadership. I don't have the executive presence. I'm getting all this feedback. And you think, oh, well, we've got to do all this coaching on executive presence. No, they're exhausted because they're not nourishing their body. And so they're not able to show up in their full ability because of that factor. So yeah, I became a nutritionist so that I could really help with that piece of the puzzle, because it's such a foundational building block to our energy and our vitality. And yet we don't think about it very often that way. We don't think about food as fuel, or nourishment, or all the things that I think we should be focused on when it comes to our nutrition. Particularly, I will say, in the United States, I think we've got, unfortunately, a lot of our food system is not real food.
Yeah, I think it's like what's at the crux of a lot of it is that when things get so busy and, you know, when the work is so important and you care so much about it, it's almost like the other things are things that need to get done so that you can do, you know, your real work. And like you just can't underestimate the significant impact that skipping lunch or, you know, like even when you're traveling, like, because it is harder, you know, I mean, all three of us here will know that it is more difficult to keep on top of it when you're out of your normal routine. But there are choices that you can make once you have the awareness around it, I think. And once you can see the connection, like these things aren't just things that you need to do because, you know, you have to eat at some point throughout the day. They're things that you need to do to be the best person, you know, to be the best you can in work and in your own life, which is what you say in your work.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, like, I understand I don't use the word busy because I think we kind of say that word too often. And it's almost a negative, but most people that are in those leadership roles, they enjoy full capacity, right? Like they enjoy very full lives. And so that is at a certain pace. And if we don't prioritize food, it's really easy for it to just go out the wayside. So I really focus on how do you enable yourself to have those quick things that are right at your fingertips. I always joke around about my backpack because the front of my backpack is just filled with healthy snacks because I travel pretty much every single week and airports are not the great place to find healthy food. So I just have a plethora of healthy snacks that at any moment I can reach in and grab nutrient dense food. And just having that has been such a game changer for my very full world, so that I'm not worried about spending an hour trying to find something healthy and just grabbing a Snickers bar instead. Like I can just reach in my backpack. So that's something I work with executives on, is like, how do we prioritize food in a way where you wouldn't go on a business trip without your computer? Why would you go on a business trip without healthy snacks in your backpack or your briefcase or whatever you use.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good point. You wouldn't go without your computer or your technology or your phone. That's a really good point. Yeah, it's a really good point. And the other is about hydration too, about, you know, if you're so busy and you're not drinking water, we don't actually understand the impact of dehydration on our capacity to make decisions or to think clearly or to make the healthy choice of food, because you need the energy to make the healthy choice. These things are sort of yin and yang, aren't they, together?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I always talk to people about physiology and psychology and recognizing that we need to think about both. And sometimes I was talking to an executive recently and he's like, I just have no willpower. And I'm like, no, that's not what's going on. You are actually in a place where your physiology is working against you. And so he wasn't eating lunch and he was, you know, packing his schedule. And then in the evenings, he's like, I have all these business dinners. So I'm just, you know, I'm reaching for the thing that I shouldn't be reaching for. And I said, wait. What's happening is you're depriving your body. And when you deprive your body and you're not nourishing your body through the day, what happens is your brain is getting messages that say, get the thing that breaks down as fast as possible. And that's going to be things that are super starchy and sugary. So of course you're reaching for that. That's what your brain signals are asking for. And so you think this is a psychology issue. It's not. This is a physiology issue. And so I think really understanding both is important in our journey with nutrition.
Yeah.
And I really feel like sometimes we overemphasize the physiology or we overemphasize the psychology. And we also get into cycles of self-abuse around this, which are also super unhealthy because that just elevates our cortisol levels, which guess what? Makes us crave more of that starchy.
Yeah.
That's not good for us. So, you know, I talk a lot about having compassion and care and self-love through everything we do and the importance of that in our journeys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's huge. I think we really don't talk enough about this. I think it's absolutely huge. We're doing this thing in our house at the moment where we're trying not to eat processed food. Awesome. Oh my God, it is like a life change. Oh, and it requires time and planning and just a whole other way of living. You know, the difference is remarkable in the clarity in your thinking. It definitely has an impact. But wow, do you have to plan in advance and even just the looking, when you begin to look more critically at the things that you have been putting in your shopping trolley and you begin to read what's on the back of them, you begin to think, wow, you know, I've sort of been a bit mindless about this it's a full-time job at the moment.
I will tell you, when I speak to large audiences, I'll often bring a salad dressing bottle and I'll ask someone to read the front of it. And it's like, ooh, healthy vitamins, all this goodness. And then I ask the audience to raise their hand for as long as they know what the ingredient is when the person reads the ingredients. And so the person on stage will flip the salad dressing bottle and start reading the ingredients. And by the time they get to the fifth ingredient, every single person's Isn't hand is down unless they're a food scientist. I did learn, I've had food scientists. That's a whole different conversation. But my point is, like, if you don't know what it is, why are you putting it in your body, right? Like I could never hand you a pill and be like, just eat it. And you'd be like, well, what's in it? I don't know, just eat it, right? Like, you just don't worry about it. You would never put that in your body. But yet we do that because we're trusting the front of packages every single day and saying, oh, well, it looks fine, right? And that's just not the case.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the link to the impact that it has on our capacity to think, our capacity to decide, the energy that we have to give to people, we're just underestimating that. They're just deeply connected.
So underestimating that.
Yeah. And that's what I love about your book. It challenges us to think about that. You know, it just joins the dots, which is the first time I've seen that being done for leadership. So I really like that.
Thank you. Yeah. I really think it's an important thing that we need to talk about more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like when you're talking about underestimating the benefits that it can have, like I think when you look at the opposite, it becomes very clear how interconnected these things are. Like I know if I'm tired or if I'm stressed, if we even just started from there, like, you know, you become more tired. The food that you come home in the evening, you're going to go for the worst choice, I suppose. You're not going to go for the better choice. Then when you eat those food, I'm probably staying up a little bit later, restless, not able to sleep as well, get up in the morning. And like, that's something that I know, like, probably all of us have experienced. You know, it's very clear when you think about the opposite, right, how these things are interconnected and how one makes the other that little bit worse. So I think, you know, when you look about it at it that way, it's clear the positive impacts that it can have.
Yeah,
I know I rarely go, like, say if I go exercise at lunchtime, if I'm working from home, I'll rarely come back afterwards and want a real crappy lunch. You know, because when you've done something like that, like, you're just more inclined to want something that little bit. And it's not even that, you know, I'm being good or, you know, in inverted commas, like, you know, it's, you don't want that food. You want something better for you. You know that you need to be, you need to get the nutrients back in, you need to replenish yourself so you can keep going. So I think, yeah, maybe looking at the opposite, not dwelling on, you know, the negatives too much, but it helps us to understand the positive cycle that could occur in the other circumstance.
I totally agree. And one of the things I talk a lot about is to focus on the 80-20 rule, which is like 80% of the time, and this percentage looks different for everyone, but 80% of the time, focusing on nourishing like your physical body, making sure you're getting the right nutrients in, but 20% of the time, make sure you're also nourishing your soul. Because I think a lot of times what we find is that people get into this yo-yoing, this extreme nature of how they eat, where it's like, and you said, and that what triggered this was like the good, right? People have this perspective of like, I'm eating good, or I'm eating bad. And I just want to get away from that, because I think that causes us to go into that negative self-talk, where I would rather us say, like, how do we find a place, a lifestyle where we're nourishing ourselves from both the physical and the soulful perspective? So our brains don't do well with deprivation, right? So if you say you can never, I love dark chocolate. If you said to me, you can never have dark chocolate again, right? My brain would be obsessed with wanting dark chocolate. And I'd be like, I can't have it. I can't have it. I can't have it. And I'd just be thinking about how I can't have it. And then the first bite that I have, I'd be like, I'm going to have 7 bars of dark chocolate because, oh, I'm being bad, right? And that's not the right perspective, right? The right thing you need to do, and I always use the example, if I put a book in front of you and said, don't open it, what do you want? You want to open it, right? Like, that's just how we're wired. So we can't put ourselves in these situations where we're restricting, because eventually we go the other direction and then we get in this back and forth. And so my focus is, how do you cultivate a style of eating that nourishes all parts of you, including your leadership? And that's really how I talk about nutrition.
I think it's brilliant because it connects the dots. It, you know, it helps us be holistic in how we're approaching our work and our life. So I really think there's something huge in that, because, you know, we're listening. I was at a conference recently and I was looking at everybody who in from the leadership space, and they're all tired. They all look tired. They're all exhausted. You know, that, you know, we're not really saying, we're talking about leadership burnout.
Right.
But we're not talking about, are you sleeping? Are you resting? Who can you lean on? When do you get a break? How do you put that in place? So we're talking about these things at a really high system level, you know, but we're actually not talking about them on the day to day. How can we move the dial and actually think differently about this to help you, you know? And of course, the job is huge and people do get tired, but if you're getting to bed at a reasonable hour and you're actually sleeping, that will at least help you feel a bit more in control of work the following day.
Huge. Yeah. I spoke at a conference, this was many, many years ago, and it was, I'm not going to name names, but an organization that was specifically focused on health. And I came in and for the breakfast for the conference, it was all sugary pastries.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how, what?
Yeah.
I'm not putting the dots together here that you want these people to engage in a health conversation all day long, and yet you're nourishing them with sugary pastries and no choices for something that might nourish their, you know, their physical body. That feels off. Why are we missing the importance of nutrition? And I think that we miss that a lot. And certainly in leadership development, it's like, why are you talking about nutrition? Why are we not talking about nutrition, right? Like, it's a very important piece to the puzzle, but very rarely do you see it talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been talking at these different conferences about burnout and sustainability of leadership, and they're important topics. But we are not once have we talked about sleep, rest and repair, food, healthy energy, hydration, all of the things that we need. And the thing is that they're the first things that we stop doing when we actually get a bit stressed, and they're our protective factor.
I know. It is the first thing we sacrifice.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I think the key probably is like opening up that space for us all as individuals to think about what are the ways in which we can make this work for ourselves. Because I suppose I'm conscious as well, there is those bigger conversations of, oh, we need to make things more sustainable. But like, what does that actually look like? Yeah. And it's these things that we're talking about here. And it's taking them and figuring out what does that look like for you? Like when you take something like exercise. And I know we briefly spoke to, when we were speaking to Nick Johnson, we briefly mentioned this piece, like what's the best piece of exercise? The one, you know, that you like, the one that you enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a breaking it down that this is doing and enabling people in that really coming from that really positive place of like self-compassion in figuring out what is the way that we can work here as individuals that suit us, our needs, you know, whether it be our fat, including our family, our organizations and so on.
Yeah.
So true. And I think just knowing ourselves helps with that. Like I'm somebody, I love movement and community. I just love being with people and I'm more motivated to move with others. And some people feel the exact opposite. They're like, please don't do that.
Yeah.
So, I love what Nick shared, right? The best movement you can do is the one you're going to do, right? It's the one you're going to keep doing. And I think sometimes we get really rigid in our perspective of like, I have to do this and I have to do that. And no, we should be focused on what's the thing we're going to continue to do? What's the thing that nourishes us?
Yeah. You know, when I was reading your book and you talk about humanity in the workplace, and now as we're listening to you, I'm thinking about that your message isn't just about humanity in the workplace. It's also about humanity towards ourselves in the workplace. So it's not just about that relational piece with other people, but it's the relational piece with ourselves that's important in that dynamic as well. It's really good. Yeah.
I've heard a phrase that I absolutely love. I didn't create it, but the concept of radical best friendship to self. I heard that and I was like, yes, we need to be so good to ourselves. And if we can embrace that, wow, a lot changes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it reminds me of, I just opened it up here because I couldn't remember the exact wording of it, but it's that coaching piece of, this is directly from your book. The answers are within us. We just have to listen.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, we need, all right, the information and the tools to be able to think about these things and join the dots that you're doing. But the answers of what works for us and what will help us are there in ourselves.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. And I ask people to think about the last time someone told them what they should do for their own well-being and how that landed. And everybody started laughing, right? Because like it never worked. It doesn't work. It's like, please stop. I feel judgment. I feel shame. I need you to back off. Versus if someone just asked you a question of like, what would serve you in this moment? We often can find those things within. And that's that intrinsic motivation, right? That's what we're after. But when people come at us as you should do this and you should do that and this will so work for you and blah, blah, blah. You're like, I don't know. And it just creates a barrier. And so the more we can approach these conversations with recognizing that the answers are within all of us and appreciating that and just taking time to find them and just be still with ourselves, we will find the answer. We're incredibly wise beings.
Yeah. Isn't that the joy of coaching? It really is to just open up our space with ourselves. They're just being facilitated by someone else, but opening up the space to listen to yourself, hear yourself. Yeah. Pretty cool.
We don't get enough of it.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Yeah.
I'm wondering, is it okay if I pivot slightly? Because there was something that just stood out to me in the book as well that I just really wanted to hear your take on, Jamie. And it was this idea that when you're in a leadership position, it was in the context, you know, you're working with Brad, who's the, you know, the character. Yes. In the book. And it's this idea of when you're in a leadership position, people are always watching.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And I just thought it was so true. And it just really rang home in me. I just would love to hear a little bit more on your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know sometimes when I talk about this, it feels heavy for people. And my perspective is you chose to be a leader. And being a leader means that you are in the spotlight and people are watching you all the time. You are the role model of the culture you are trying to create. So if you are just talking about culture and not living into it, you are not role modeling, and therefore it does not get integrated into the organization. And so, yes, people have a magnifying glass on you, and that's a lot. I understand that's a lot, and I understand that can be overwhelming, particularly as people step into leadership roles. And I think the faster people can embrace that and recognize the impact that they have, the better. Because we know, you know, we know scientifically that our emotions are contagious, for example, and that's magnified when you're in a leadership role. So mm-hmm. How are you owning that? How, and I'm not saying that that means you have to be happy all the time. That, please, that is not my message here. But my message is we need to be thoughtful. We need to recognize the impact we're having on others. And we need to recognize that the spotlight is on us and how we show up every day matters. Mm-hmm. And that is another reason that when we care for ourselves, we have more of that energy. We have more of that positive impact. And when I talk about positive leadership, I think sometimes people think I'm talking about like, yay, we have to be excited and happy and optimistic all the time. And positive leadership, I think Dr. Kim Cameron has done a beautiful job talking about this. Positive leadership looks like having gratitude for others. Positive leadership looks like creating the space for others' emotions, positive and negative. Positive leadership is being within integrity and living in your core values as a leader every day. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm talking about when we think about that magnifying glass and that spotlight on a leader. I think vitality becomes even more important when you look at it through that lens, because you caring for you, you caring for those energy reserves allows you to be that person when you show up for others. And again, it's a lot to think about, but that is the reality of leadership. And that is the reality of creating thriving organizational cultures. It starts with how your leaders behave every single day.
Mm-hmm. And becoming comfortable with being in the being visible. You know, some leaders are, it's interesting because there isn't, we say the same thing. You're not an accidental leader. You applied for the role. It is something that you've chosen to do. And that's brilliant, but it comes with it. So just get comfortable with it. And it's going to be messy sometimes. And it's not always going to be easy, but it's just part of it. And it's just, so when we when we take the high stakes out of it, we just allow ourselves to be ourselves. I think that's really huge.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of paradoxes of leadership. There's a lot of yes ends, right? We need to think about the individual and the organization. We need to be authentic and not share every emotion. Mm-hmm. And like, so I think sometimes leadership becomes confusing because there's just so many yes ends, not either ors, and not a lot of black and white. And so when we have to play in the gray area and two things have to be true at once, that can be really confusing. And I think human beings, there's so many paradoxes, and that is true for leadership as well. There's just a lot of paradoxes there.
Yeah. And I think it's just being comfortable in that sort of messy is the wrong word, but just that challenging space that it's not clear, that it is opaque and that you have to exercise judgment. And that's the point. If it was, you know, if it was an automated system, everybody would just put machines in. But you have to exercise human judgment to bring the organization forward. And that's the greatest creativity space, but maybe the most daunting for some.
Yeah, there's a lot of choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what's helpful about that is that it's not like it's just naming it, isn't it? I mean, it's naming the reality that when you are in a position like this, people are looking to what you're doing, but it's not the that means you need to be, you know, as you said, they're the quote unquote happy all the time or whatever the case may be. It's just naming it, isn't it? And it's just once we're aware of it. And once, you know, we realize it in the day to day of what we're doing. I mean, I know there was another piece, I won't be able to get the page up quickly now, but it's talking about the percentages of how much communication, how little communication is actually the words you're saying, you know, then versus your tone and your body language and things like that. I mean, you know, being aware of it is most of the challenge, isn't it? And we don't necessarily have to say, so that means this needs to happen. It's just naming it.
It is. And that's something I really want to help leaders with, is naming some of the things we study in psychology that maybe we haven't labeled in the business world, because it just helps get our brains around it. For example, this concept of emotional labor, which we talk about in psychology and we understand it's a mechanism, and emotional labor is when we're displaying an emotion that is different than the one we feel. Yeah. We have to do that in leadership all the time. But when I share that concept with leaders, they're like, oh, it has a name. Yeah. And like, not only does it have a name, it actually drains your energy. And so just being aware of those things makes you more focused on intentionally having the reserves to do those things. So I think language to me is so important. I always say language builds culture. I think language also helps us like understand ourselves and our brains and our, and all the things we've been talking about, our whole human body. And so I love bringing to the surface for leaders some of these psychological concepts that we study that can help them really understand themselves and leadership even better.
Yeah, because I think when we don't recognize that emotional labor is often a central part of leadership, because it has to be, because it's just the nature of people, and we're complex beings. Sometimes I think leaders feel that they're not being authentic when they're doing that, because we confuse that authentic means I have to be straight up about everything and I have to be really nice. And it's really not that. It's about being congruent and understanding that there are activities that you have to perform to help people be their best. And that's your job.
I love that you created that distinction. I often talk about authenticity is, are you in alignment with your core values, your character, your principles? That's authenticity. And I think sometimes we get really confused when we talk about authenticity, because leaders will say to me, I can't be authentic. I can't walk into the boardroom if I'm having a crappy day and being like, wow, it's a really crappy day for me, right? Like, you can't do that. And so, and that's some of the paradox that I think we have to illuminate for people, is like, no, we get it. You don't get to be fully transparent emotionally. That's not what you can do. And authenticity is essential. And that alignment to who you are at the core is really important as your compass every single day.
Yeah, I describe it, and it's very similarly to you. And I talk about that authenticity is about being congruent with your purpose and your values, you know, and really spending time to help people understand what they are so that they know what they're going to get, which is the piece. So how much time do we spend showing, it's not all sitting down saying these are my values and you all have to listen, but that we are congruent constantly, that our decisions, people will see very clearly, fairness is really important here, and we know that the decision will be made because the person values fairness. And they learn that after a while. And that fairness doesn't necessarily mean I give you what you want. Fairness means maybe I can't give you what you want because I need to be fair. So it's a robust concept. It's not a let's all be happy and, you know, the tyranny of positivity piece. It's a more congruent piece. Yeah,
I agree. I think there's a lot misunderstood about the field of positive psychology. I always try and describe positive psychology as it's the science of human thriving. It's not happyology. That's not what this is.
Happyology, I love that. I think I'm going to write down that word. I really like it. I love it.
Biology. I can't take credit for it. But it's just when we think about what we're after, in whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in life, I don't think there's anybody that would say, I don't want to be a thriving human being. I don't want to be flourishing. But thriving and flourishing doesn't mean that we're happy all the time. In fact, if we're chasing happiness, that is going to be detrimental to our well-being. So I think it's just an interesting distinction that we don't talk about enough around the difference between fulfillment and happiness, right? Like, I'm not after being happy all the time, but I sure am after being fulfilled all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I describe when I'm talking with aspiring leaders, I say it's about doing the good work. And I use that phrase. It's a very, okay, it's a bland phrase, but it actually means something. It, you know, and it's about doing the work that is meaningful and good for you, that will help you live towards your values, but also help the people that you're leading. And it's good enough. So, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it just has to be honest and full of integrity. And it's, I think, doing that, what we understand is our good work is almost a protective factor against the burnout pieces, because we know that we're doing something that has value.
Absolutely. Yeah. Three more.
I'm wondering, Jamie, could you tell us a little bit about some of your recent research? I know you had a paper very recently published there. Do you want to tell us a little bit?
Yeah.
Yes, I feel I got a new data set last night, so I'm like a little bit excited, but it's probably too early.
You are definitely a research addict. We'll give you that.
Yeah. The good news is the research that we've been working on is really expanding the scale for vitality. And I was focused on, to start with, the physical and the emotional and the psychological sides of vitality. But there's also this other piece that I wanted to study, which is the spiritual vitality side. And when I talk about the spirit, sometimes people say, oh, are you talking religion? Are you talking spirituality? And I really define this as what connects you to something greater than yourself. What connects you to your best self? For some people, that is religion and spirituality. For some people, that is taking a walk with their dog, being in nature, meditation. There's so many different ways that we have that spirit vitality. So the data set that I just got back was looking at that fourth factor in vitality. And I haven't done the full analysis, but at first glance, it's looking really promising that it is four factors, not three. And that's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. The study that was just published was actually a qualitative study. I interviewed 20 CEOs of Fortune 500 companies about this concept of vitality and the leadership behaviors that are displayed in highly vital versus depleted leaders. And interestingly, what I found were 8 themes that were opposite to each other, which, you know, in research, you don't often find it to be that clean.
Yeah.
But what I found was everything from the distinction of when highly vital, we're transferring positive relational energy, to when we're depleted, doing the exact opposite, or being curious in nature when you're highly vital and closed when you're not. And so there were 8 themes I found through my research, through being engaged versus different disengaged, back to, you know, what we were talking about, you know, mind optimization, brain optimization. Highly vital leaders are more visionary, whereas depleted, you get more myopic. And so that to me was really interesting to see. The connection, again, not just from a quantitative side, but a qualitative side of what happens when we feel highly vital versus depleted. So that's the study that just got published.
Yeah, where was it published?
Frontiers in Positive Psychology. So
fantastic.
I'll make sure.
Yeah, fantastic. We'll have to share the link definitely with the episode. There'll be lots of people interested in looking at that for sure.
Definitely put the link in, because I think, and it's open access, isn't it? Is Frontiers open access? It is, isn't it?
Yes, I'm pretty passionate about open access, because I really want to make sure that research is in the hands of as many people as want to read it.
Yeah, as much as possible. If we can get our research from outside the paywall, so the teachers, for us, it's teachers that we're mostly working with, but that they have access to it, because it's otherwise it's the academic community talking to itself. So 100% support the way that you're thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. And this whole idea around spiritual—I know, as you said, Jamie, it is early days, I suppose. So we probably shouldn't get into it too much because I'm sure you'll have plenty that you want to plenty more that you want thinking and writing that you want to do about it. But I really think that idea around spirituality and bringing that into the conversation as well is massive. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more of your work on that as well, because I think that can have that's going to have a real impact.
Yeah,
I'm super excited about it, and we will absolutely. So the vitality scale with the three factors has been published, but we will, once we see the data and really get all the analysis done, we'll publish another revised scale with the four factors so that people can start utilizing it, and we'll create open access again to it so anyone and everyone can grab it and use the items in it.
I think it's really important because there's that existential piece, that reason, that sort of greater reason, something greater than ourselves, whatever it is. And I like the way that you've kind of said whatever it is for someone. But I actually think that's a vital part of our sustainability in our work, if we're leaders or in other ways in our lives, that connection is what gives us that sense of purpose as to why we want to do what we do. And I think that keeps us connected in some way, both to our work and to people around our work. That's really important. It's disconnection that can often cause a problem. So these things are really interconnected in very, they might look loose or tenuous ways, but they're not really. They're actually quite strong in the links.
Yes, they really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that piece around connection that you just said there, Patricia, I mean, spirituality in whatever sense that it's being interpreted for the individual is something, it definitely connects you to the broader purpose. It connects you to others, but it's that piece that connects you back to yourself as well, as, you know, whether it is that taking a walk or, you know, meditation or breath work or religion, whatever it is for people.
Yes. Yes. And it was interesting coming up with the items for that piece of the scale, because I really did want it to be inclusive of what it is that gets you back to that best part of you or something greater than you. And so it's interesting because it's I'm trying to find a way to make that piece really, I guess what I'm trying to say is I want everybody to be able to see themselves in that and not feel like, well, that doesn't apply to me, because it applies, as you said, to every human being. It just looks different for all of us.
Yeah. And I suppose it just hasn't always been talked about in that broad way. So it's resulted in, you know, there being people who don't resonate with it, I think, because of that. You know, if you're not religious, for example, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's nothing to do with you. The idea of spirituality is nothing to do with you and the way you work and the way you live your life. So I think it's important that we talk about it in that broad way.
I think so too.
Yeah. Brilliant. Jamie, as we're coming to a close, I'm wondering, what is it that you're hoping for leadership going forward? What are your hopes for leadership?
Wow, gosh, that's such a beautiful, wonderful question. I really, really hope that we start focusing more on how do we create communities of thriving within our organizations and really connect the dots between leadership and well-being, and that these not be separate conversations anymore. I think those are my hopes, because I have always felt like organizations are an incredible opportunity where all of these people come together and we spend 2/3 of our waking life with the people we work with. How do we create true communities of human thriving? And I think when we don't focus there, it is just a big gaping missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that's my hope.
That's amazing. I think we share that for sure.
We agree. And yeah, we agree for sure.
Bringing it back to the idea of community as well. We were talking to Belita Siddique last week, and she was talking so much about that importance of community. So I think this really dovetails nicely with that as well. And it's also the who am I within that community, isn't it? And making sure that you're making time for yourself within that space.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, Jamie, this has been fabulous.
Yeah, I think we'll have to we'll probably stay talking to you. I think we're definitely going to connect maybe people to your work because they need to see it. But I think this is a conversation that we need to have so that we're more and more that we're moving the coaching out of just the cerebral or the cognitive into this more lived embodied space. It speaks to me, and I certainly can connect hugely to what you're saying. So I think our listeners will too. I'm really grateful that you said yes and took the time to talk to us.
I'm very grateful for the conversation. Thank you both so much.